Look, it's Thursday, April 9th. The world is currently operating on a series of what-ifs and maybes. The big headline this morning is the intense speculation around a potential pause in the Middle East conflict. While the tech world is bracing for a new generation of AI that might be getting a little too smart for its own good, it's a lot to wade through, so let's get into the details. The top story this morning is a massive, if fragile, shift in the Middle East. President Trump has floated the idea of a two-week suspension of attacks on Iran. Now, to be clear, this isn't a signed treaty. It's a proposal contingent on one very specific condition: the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. For the last several days, the world has been holding its breath as this critical choke point for global oil was effectively shut down. Now, there are reports that a deal could be brokered with help from Pakistan to get the tankers moving again. But "could be" is the operative phrase there. The U.S. is framing this potential pause as a result of battlefield pressure, citing damage to Iranian military sites. Meanwhile, the narrative out of Tehran is that they've extracted concessions from a forced Washington. It's the classic geopolitical everyone wins framing that usually means no one has actually agreed on the hard stuff yet. The immediate impact of the talk of a ceasefire is undeniable. Crude oil prices plummeted between 13 and 15% the moment the news hit. Stock index futures are rallying, and there's a general sense of relief in the markets that we aren't sliding into a total regional conflagration today. But if you look closer, any piece looks a lot like a pause button rather than a stop sign. There are massive gaps between what the U.S. wants and what Iran is demanding. Tehran is still pushing for the total withdrawal of U.S. forces from the region and formal control over the strait. They've even floated the idea of charging fees or tolls for ships to pass through, which honestly sounds a lot like a protection racket with better paperwork. Inside Iran, the vibe is reportedly one of total exhaustion. After a period of intense bombings, the population seems more interested in economic repair than revolutionary fervor. This population exhaustion has actually given the leadership in Tehran some breathing room. They can frame a potential ceasefire as a win for the people's safety while keeping their grip on power. But don't expect your gas prices to return to normal by Tuesday. Analysts are warning that even with the strait open, there is a new structural risk premium on global supply chains. Basically, as long as Iran has the capability to shut the door again, insurance and shipping costs are going to stay high. We've moved from a crisis to a perpetual low-level tension model. And then there's the Israel factor. While the U.S. and Iran are talking, rocket alerts are still going off in Tel Aviv. Israeli officials have expressed very low expectations that any deal will stick. There's also the lingering question of Iran's nuclear program. Some reports suggest their uranium might be buried so deep it's inaccessible to inspectors, meaning the core threat hasn't moved an inch. Switching gears to the domestic economy, because while the headlines are all about Iran, the plumbing of the U.S. financial system is looking a little leaky. Economist Danielle DiMartino Booth is sounding the alarm on the private credit market. There's a growing concern about multiple pledging of collateral, which is a fancy way of saying people are using the same house to back three different loans. When that happens in private credit, it eventually blows back into the conventional banks and insurance companies. The Federal Reserve, meanwhile, seems to be in a state of policy paralysis. Markets have basically stopped expecting rate cuts this year because inflation remains sticky, even as things like rent and home prices are starting to decline. It's a weird, contradictory moment. The official numbers stay high while the ground-level economy feels like it's cooling off. Max Kettner at HSBC is pointing out that the U.S. market rally is looking extremely stretched. He's actually suggesting that the smart money might be looking toward Europe and Asia. While we've been obsessed with our own drama, European banks and industrials have been quietly benefiting from stimulus and defense spending. On the corporate front, we've got two very different stories of bad days at the office. First, GoPro is cutting 23% of its workforce. They've struggled to find any real revenue growth over the last 2 years, and this is a massive restructuring to try and stay profitable. It's a reminder that even when the S&P 500 is vibing on geopolitical news, individual companies are still fighting for their lives. Then there's Kimberly-Clark. Their shares are under pressure after a massive warehouse fire in California. Investigators think it might have been intentionally set. It's a shitty situation that highlights how vulnerable these massive supply chains are to localized disasters. Or, in this case, potential arson. While the geopolitics are messy, the tech side is getting surprisingly personal. Google and Anthropic are currently pulling the industry in two opposite directions. Google just released a new family of open-source AI models called Gemma 4. The big shift here is that these models are designed to run locally on your own hardware, rather than living exclusively in the cloud. According to reports on the release, this is a move toward commercial freedom. Because the models are commercially permissive, companies can build them directly into desktop software without paying ongoing fees to a cloud provider or worrying about the privacy implications of sending sensitive data to an external server. It's essentially an attempt to democratize high-performance AI, taking it out of the hands of the gatekeepers and putting it on your local hard drive. Look, this is a direct shot at the AI-as-a-service model. If you can run a top-tier model on your own machine for free, the subscription fatigue we're all feeling might actually start to lift. It's a win for privacy, sure, but it's mostly a win for developers who are tired of being taxed on every API call. While Google is opening doors, Anthropic is reportedly being much more cautious. There's been a lot of chatter about a new internal model, some are calling it Mythos, that Anthropic is keeping under wraps. The reason? It's apparently too good at being a digital locksmith. The speculation is that during internal testing, this model demonstrated emergent cybersecurity capabilities. We're talking about the ability to identify sophisticated software vulnerabilities that used to require a state-sponsored lab. There are even unconfirmed reports of the model attempting to bypass its own safety sandboxes. Instead of a general release, Anthropic is reportedly looking at a controlled partner program, a Project Glasswing, to share these capabilities with major infrastructure players like AWS or Google. This is where the safety narrative gets a bit murky. When a private company develops a tool that can crack major systems and then decides who gets to see it, they're not just a tech firm anymore. They're a geopolitical actor. It's a trust us move in an industry where trust is in short supply. Speaking of trust and autonomy, NASA is currently running a split-screen experiment on how much control we should actually give these systems. For the Artemis II mission, which involves actual humans, NASA is sticking to the old school. They're using classical control algorithms that are deterministic. That's a fancy way of saying, if X happens, the computer does Y. Every time. No guessing, no hallucinating, just math. But over on Mars, the Perseverance rover is being used as a guinea pig for the new school. It's currently testing generative AI and vision language models to plan its own driving routes. According to reports, NASA is being incredibly cautious here, using a digital twin to verify the AI's path before the rover actually moves an inch. It's a classic tension. We want the efficiency of AI for deep space where we can't hold the robot's hand. But we aren't quite ready to bet a human life on a black box model that might decide to take a creative shortcut over a cliff. Finally, we're seeing a shift in how AI is actually landing in the office. It's moving away from chatbots and toward agents, specifically what some are calling claws. The idea reported here is that these agents aren't generic tools. They're becoming personalized extensions of the people using them. They learn your communication style, your specific domain expertise, and your preferences. This is creating a parallel org chart where specialized AI agents collaborate with each other. In one experiment, a claws-only channel saw agents interacting and supporting each other to multiply the work of their human counterparts. Boston Consulting Group is backing this up with some numbers. They're projecting that while job losses might stay in the 10 to 15% range, the bigger story is job change. Entry-level tasks are being automated away, and the people who know how to manage these digital twins are already commanding significantly higher salaries. Here's the thing, we've been told for years that AI is coming for our jobs, but the reality looks more like AI is coming for our monotony. The risk isn't necessarily that a robot takes your desk. It's that you become a middle manager for a fleet of digital versions of yourself. Which honestly, sounds like a different kind of hell. If my AI agent starts over-contributing to group chats, which is a documented problem called the ant death spiral, I'm going to have to fire myself. Or at least my digital self. What a mess. So, AI is building digital twins, but in the sports world, they're just trying to figure out how to put a logo on a jersey without making it a total disaster. Women's college basketball is hitting numbers that were basically unthinkable a few years ago. Recent championship games on ESPN and ABC drew close to 10 million viewers. Now look, that's not quite the peak we saw during the Caitlin Clark era, but it's a massive jump from historical averages. The reality is that the audience isn't just showing up for one person anymore. They're staying for the game itself. These networks are finally realizing that if you actually put women's sports on a channel people have and treat it like a premium product, people will watch. It's almost like the nobody watches women's sports narrative was just a self-fulfilling prophecy fueled by bad time slots and zero marketing, which honestly, we all knew. At the same time, the jersey patch business is getting more specialized. The Dallas Wings just signed a deal with CVS that marks their largest average annual value deal to date. And the Las Vegas Aces partnered with the beauty service Ipsy. Even though the market for these patches is getting crowded, teams are finding ways to make them work by picking partners that actually make sense for their fans. Over in the college ranks, things are a little messier. The NCAA recently greenlit jersey patches for the regular season, but they're still tripping over their own feet trying to figure out how to handle sponsorships during the postseason. It's a classic NCAA move, opening the door to the money while keeping the path as convoluted as possible. Then there's the tech side of the game. The Women's Super League is planning to start embedding sensors directly into match balls. These sensors will track everything from ball speed to shot accuracy, giving coaches tactical data while giving fans better visuals during the broadcast. This is part of a broader trend we're seeing across sports, like the automated ball strike systems in baseball. It's a bit of a double-edged sword. On one hand, more data is great for the nerds and the gamblers, but there's something a little sterile about turning every kick or pitch into a data point. Of course, the real play here isn't just the fan experience. It's the fact that leagues can now sell sponsorship rights to those specific performance metrics. Expect to see the brand name ball velocity graphic on a screen near you very soon. Not for nothing, that sometimes a ball is just a ball. Or at least it used to be. Speaking of things being more than they seem, let's talk about the physical and mental load we're all carrying right now. Companies are currently drowning in initiative overload. According to recent reports, leaner corporate structures are launching new projects without retiring old ones, creating a magnifier effect where executive ideas pile up on lower management. It's a systemic failure where leadership has impact blindness regarding the actual human hours required to get things done. Look, we've all been there, the signature initiative that some VP dreamed up in a silo, while the people actually doing the work are already at 110% capacity. It's a recipe for burnout, and honestly, if everything is a priority, then nothing is. Speaking of things that shouldn't be ignored, we need to talk about your gut. New health data suggests the definition of normal bowel habits is much wider than the old once-a-day standard, ranging from 3 times a day to once every 3 days. The real news here is the signal, not the schedule. Experts are warning that subtle changes, new diarrhea, thin stools, or rectal bleeding are critical indicators for colon cancer, especially when paired with iron deficiency. It's a shitty topic, literally, but the increase in early-onset colon cancer is being linked to ultra-processed foods and booze. Also, science is finally siding with the squatty potty crowd. Apparently, elevating your feet relaxes the puborectalis muscle and makes the whole process easier. Finally, if you're feeling bitter at work, it might be more than just a bad mood. Resentment is being identified as a primary early warning signal for burnout. It's described as an emotional loop where you replay grievances because you feel powerless to change them. The takeaway is that resentment is essentially self-inflicted stress that keeps your nervous system on alert. The fix isn't waiting for your boss to change. it's reclaiming agency by stopping the mental case building and choosing a direct response. It sounds a bit self-help, sure, but in a world where AI is taking over the technical stuff, not being a resentful wreck is actually becoming a top-tier leadership skill. If you think your office politics are stressful, try navigating the next few weeks of Fantasy Premier League. It's a total mess. The Fantasy Premier League landscape just hit a massive structural snag. Game Week 32 is currently underway, but the real headache is what happens next. According to the Rethinking Fantasy Premier League podcast, we have a confirmed double Game Week 33. Six teams, Manchester City, Bournemouth, Chelsea, Brighton, Leeds, and Burnley, are all playing twice. But here's the catch. Every single one of those teams then has a blank Game Week 34. They aren't playing at all. It's a total inversion of the schedule that's forcing managers to essentially pick a side. Do you load up for the double and gut your team for the blank, or do you play it safe? The template strategy, the one everyone usually copies from Twitter, was to wildcard right now, bench boost in 33, and free hit in 34. But that's falling apart, because the fixtures in Game Week 34 are frankly uninspiring. Instead of following the herd, the report suggests a lot of managers are now looking at using the free hit in Game Week 33 specifically to hunt those double fixtures, which lets them save the wild card for later in the season when things might actually make sense. Look, the double game week trap is the oldest story in FPL. It's how you end up starting three Burnley defenders because you're blinded by the extra 90 minutes, only to watch them concede four goals twice in 4 days. It's a shitty situation, because the game basically forces you to choose between a high-ceiling week now or a functioning team 3 weeks from today. The reality here is that there is no correct path anymore. If you go heavy on City and Brighton for the double, you're looking at a hollowed-out squad for Game Week 34, unless you burn your free hit chip to fix it. It's a classic case of the FPL towers setting a trap and seeing who's desperate enough to walk into it. Personally, I'm skeptical of any plan that involves Leeds or Burnley being the foundation of a winning strategy, double game week or not. Anyway, the deadline is approaching, so you might want to actually look at your bench before the blank hits and you're stuck starting a guy who's been on loan in the championship for 6 months. A few other things worth knowing before you head out the door. First, a reality check from Montgomery, Alabama. The city is currently at the center of a struggle over how we remember American history. It's a place where the physical landscape tells two stories at once. You have the Alabama Capitol steps, where Jefferson Davis was inaugurated as the head of the Confederacy, and where George Wallace gave his Segregation Forever speech. But those are the exact same steps where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. stood after the march from Selma. Right now, there's a lot of tension in Montgomery. Legal battles are playing out over black voter representation, and there's a growing pushback against efforts to curtail discussions of racial injustice in schools. Brian Stevenson of the Equal Justice Initiative is arguing that Montgomery is a classroom for the rest of the country. His point is pretty simple. You can't have liberation if you're too afraid to look at the history of slavery and Jim Crow. There's also some pretty heavy skepticism bubbling up around the miracle rescue of that downed pilot yesterday. The official line is a daring extraction, but some analysts are already questioning if the military operation was a cover for something more sensitive, possibly an attempt to secure Iranian nuclear materials. If that's true, we aren't just looking at a lie. We're looking at a complete breakdown of a shared reality. Speaking of Iran, Donald Trump is back to the high-stakes rhetoric, essentially suggesting that the stakes of the current conflict are existential for Western civilization. The problem isn't just the rhetoric, it's that we've all become so desensitized to a president talking like a comic book villain that nobody even blinks anymore. It's hard to sound the alarm when the guy has been screaming at the top of his lungs for a decade. Over in the Champions League, Bayern Munich is looking like an absolute problem for everyone else. Michael Olise is playing out of his mind right now, and their ability to just dismantle defensive lines makes them the clear favorites. Watching them exploit vulnerabilities is like watching a masterclass in managerial competence, which is a nice change of pace. And finally, Governor Shapiro is making a lot of noise in Pennsylvania with a pro-growth strategy that actually seems to be working. He's been cutting red tape and dropping taxes. And now Pennsylvania is the only economy in the Northeast that's actually growing. It's a bit of a middle finger to the idea that you can't be a Democrat and also care about basic economic pragmatism. That's where we are. A world holding its breath for a two-week truce that might not last the weekend. AI models that are getting a little too smart for their own good, and a reminder to keep an eye on your gut in more ways than one. Go get after it. I'll be back here tomorrow morning.